Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
Over a century ago, the Texas ranch of Charles and Marianne Goodnight played a critical role in saving the southern bison herd from extinction. Mrs. Goodnight convinced her husband to take in some baby buffalo that had been orphaned and raise them on the ranch. Their story inspired artist and distant relative Verrill Goodnight. She wanted to make a sculpture depicting a rancher's wife bottle-feeding a baby buffalo, just like Marianne Goodnight once did. The hitch was, she needed a live model. Verrill Goodnight and her husband Roger Brooks found their model in a less-than-week-old abandoned buffalo calf named Charlie. But Charlie, as it turns out, would become a much bigger part of their lives. The story is chronicled in a new book by R.D. Rosen called A Buffalo in the House. And with me now are Verrill Goodnight and Roger Brooks. Hello there.
Hi there.
Hello, Steve.
Or maybe I should say howdy.
Howdy. We are out west.
The sculpture is of a baby bison, so it doesn't take long for him to, well, you know, not be needed any longer as your model, right, Verrill?
My idea was to borrow this baby buffalo and to use him for a model and then in turn return him up to the ranch. I sculpted him when he was about a month old. So, you know, it went fairly quickly. I was done with him in about a month, 6 weeks, somewhere around there. But in the meantime, Roger and Charlie had fallen in love with each other. So the idea of returning him met with some resistance.
I'm assuming at the time you got the baby buffalo that maybe he weighs 100 pounds or something. But, you know, this is a critter that's going to, what, 2,200 pounds, a ton.
Well, exactly that, and probably like everybody else, we don't think too far in advance. But what our intent was with Charlie, because he was bottled raised, is that we would introduce him to bison over several trips to a bison ranch, and then integrate him in with the other bison and let him be what nature intended him to be. That didn't work because when we finally did introduce him and introduced him to a couple of very meek bison calves who had just been weaned, he had an accident his first night there and apparently was frightened by the other bison or something else and ran headlong into a steel well pipe fence and hurt his neck and basically was paralyzed.
Paralyzed?
Yes.
Quadriplegic. And they thought that Charlie's legs could possibly come back. So he stayed at the hospital for a month, and sure enough, he was able to get back up again on his own, but he could never be pasture sound. He could never be out with other buffalo.
So you now have yourself a 400, no, maybe 500, on its way to 2,200-pound pet.
That's right. We had never intended to make a pet out of him, but we not only had one, but one that could really barely walk and took a lot of rehabilitative care.
So what's it like to live with a buffalo?
Oh, gee, I could look out my office window and see him out there, and it just, you know, was always very heartening. And to be able to lay down beside a big, you know, a beast like this and to relate on a level, a common level that we found was an experience that, in my mind, could not be matched.
Roger, you can go ahead and tell me. I mean, you'd cuddle up with Charlie like your big buffalo blanket?
Well, I would lay down beside him at times, absolutely. And, you know, I could scratch him, and gee, when I'd scratch his belly, he'd even lift a leg so that I could get a better scratch on him. One thing I think that, to me, is interesting is that I could touch any part of his body except for his horns. His horns were sacred, and I needed permission to touch him.
Yeah, Roger, how do you get permission from a buffalo to touch his or her horns?
Well, you definitely need their trust, and you have to ask. And, you know, a lot of times you have to ask repeatedly. Charlie's first answer to any question was no. And then he realized you start a negotiating process. When we were out hiking, Charlie would sometimes stop and basically tell me, he says, well, I'm not going to leave here forever. And Charlie, well, gee, why don't we just go a little bit forward? No. Well, Charlie, okay, then we'll stay here. And you just let a little bit of time pass and, you know, and then negotiate with him and Most of the time, I could get my way, but it took a lot of patience.
I'm thinking of those bison horns, and you read stories about other people that have had bison as pets or tried to keep them, at least around the corral. There's more than one story where they wind up getting impaled on those.
That was always there. I never went in with Charlie without realizing I was going in with a wild animal. One thing, Steve, that I feel to describe the balance that I had to have with Charlie is that I could not let him dominate me. If he dominated me, he would hurt me. It would be just very natural with him. But I could not dominate him more than the slightest amount, because if I dominated him unfairly, he would resent me and he would hurt me.
Farrell, what was it like watching Roger and Charlie's relationship grow?
The intensity of the relationship between the two of them was beyond anything that I, and actually most animal lovers, have experienced. I think part of it is Roger. I mean, he's big, athletic, man's man, combined with this, you know, big, powerful bull bison. It's a relationship that I could never duplicate. And it was very exciting. It was very exciting. Not that at times I wasn't jealous. I'm going to have to admit to that. You know, I mean, but I think I was more jealous of the relationship than I was jealous of Charlie. I loved Charlie, too, very, very much.
So how long did Charlie live with you guys?
Well, we lost him at the age of 3, Steve. I think I better tell this because Roger still gets choked up. Charlie continued to have a weak neck. When he was 3, he got his head stuck under the lowest rail in the arena, and Roger was home alone and had to get him up with the aid of the fire department. But he got him up, but Charlie was back down again in a couple of days. And if they're down on their side for long, they get fluid in their lungs, and Charlie did, and he contracted pneumonia, and we lost him.
There's a saying that life is what happens along the way to the plans that we have, and usually that what happens is way different. What's the best thing that happened to you as a consequence of having Charlie come into your life?
Charlie was a gift. I think Richard Rosen sums it up beautifully in his book. If I could just read one sentence here. He said, "It was as if this gentle wounded buffalo had been sent out among people so that they could touch and smell a world that had been left behind, so that they might enter gracefully into nature."
Roger?
I don't know, Steve, how I can answer that. I was so honored to share a part of my life with this big bull bison, and his loss to me was more sorrowful than even the loss of my parents. So, you know, it's one of life's unique opportunities. People have those in various forms, and living with Charlie was mine.
Well, I want to thank you for taking this time with me. Verl Goodnight and Roger Brooks are the subjects of the book Buffalo in the House by R.D. Rosen. Thank you both.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Steve. Thank you.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play.
Earl Goodnight and Roger Brooks moved from Santa Fe, New Mexico to southwestern Colorado, where there's a buffalo herd nearby. And Roger Brooks is now active in efforts to protect the bison of Yellowstone.
Home, home on the range.
On the next Living on Earth, cars are killing huge numbers of barn owls all over the world, and Interstate 84 in southern Idaho is no exception.
We found 3 or 4 times more dead barn owls than squirrels, than skunks, than raccoons, than cats, than dogs. They are the most commonly killed animal along the highway.
Researchers try to find a reason and a solution. It's the barn owl roadkill mystery, next time on Living on Earth.